as more U.S. Marines are being shipped to Lebanon to replace those killed and wounded by a truck bomb in their barracks, the Defense Department is deciding how to protect those still on duty. ABC's John McQuethy reports from the Pentagon.
Defense Secretary Weinberger told reporters that his greatest emphasis in the next hours and days will now be to reduce vulnerability to the American troops that are on shore in Lebanon. He would not say how he plans to do that. Nonetheless, he said that all options are being considered. One of those options is to move the headquarters unit, which was blown away earlier today with a terrorist bomb blast, to move that headquarters out to sea, to put it just offshore on one of the ships. Asked if he would send more troops into Lebanon to reinforce and to increase the number of American forces there, he said he didn't see how that could possibly help. It would simply complicate the situation.
John McQuethy at the Pentagon. The death count of U.S. Marines and sailors stands at 146. A nearly identical truck bombing 3 miles away killed 27 members of the French peacekeeping force. 69 of the American wounded had been flown to American and British military hospitals in West Germany, Italy, and Cyprus. The 10-ship group carrying 2,000 Marines that had been diverted to Grenada has been redirected to Lebanon. I'll have more after this.
My teeth had gotten so stained from smoking, I finally bought Topol. Topol's kind of expensive compared to regular toothpaste, but compared to what I spend on cigarettes...
Topol Smoker's Tooth Polish. A combination of polishing agents and a rich foaming cleanser, especially formulated to help remove ugly yellow tobacco stains. Yet laboratory research has proven Topol cleans gently enough to be used every day instead of regular toothpaste.
Thanks to Topol, my teeth are clean and bright now. Topol really works. See?
Topol Smoker's Tooth Polish.
Come on, honey. On your feet. Remember dancing the twist?
Yeah, but Joe, it's been years.
Oh,
I'm out of shape.
You're doing great. You're doing fine.
I strained my back.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry. Sit down while I get the Doane's pills.
Good advice. Doane's pills contain magnesium salicylate, a painkiller found in no other leading analgesic. Brings temporary relief of simple muscular backache pain due to overexertion, strain, or stress. Use only as directed.
How's your back tonight, honey?
Feels much better, thanks to Doane's pills.
The Chicago teacher strike may start winding down as it begins a fourth week tomorrow. Negotiators for the Board of Education and Union came to tentative contract terms in a meeting that started yesterday morning and ended tonight. Details of the deal are being kept secret until the 43,000 teachers vote on it tomorrow. Gasoline prices are reported down for the sixth week in a row. Since August, the decline is reported to be 2.4 cents a gallon by industry analyst Dan Lundberg. The sharpest decline is noted in California, which accounts for about 10% of the nation's driving. The Citizens Labor Energy Coalition predicts another rise in the cost of keeping warm. The story from ABC's Stephen Ogg in Washington.
Heating bills are expected to go up again this winter, but not nearly as much as last winter. A Washington-based energy consumer group, the Citizen Labor Energy Coalition, says winter heating bills may rise an average of 21% this heating season. 14% of the increase would result from just having an ordinary winter, as opposed to last season's warmer temperatures, and part from an average 7% increase in natural gas prices. Combining the weather and price changes, the range is from an anticipated 64% increase in Flint, Michigan, to no change at all in Richmond, Virginia. Stephen Ogg, ABC News, Washington.
People suffering from Alzheimer's disease might be helped by a so-called memory pill being tested at the Illinois State Psychiatric Institute. People with mild to moderate loss of memory because of Alzheimer's were given the drug called CI-9-11 last month. Officials call themselves cautiously hopeful about the results. This degenerative, irreversible brain disorder affects an estimated 2 million or more Americans, mostly in their 60s, although some of the patients are in their 20s. Security officials are quoted as saying some American defense contractors have very sloppy security, and the sale of U.S. military secrets to the Soviets is just about inevitable. The Los Angeles Times reports defense plants are the weakest link in protecting such secrets. It quotes a Pentagon official as saying 100,000 to 200,000 employees of defense factories are given security clearance each year, many of them after only a perfunctory check on their backgrounds and further personal history. This is ABC News. The driver of a Greyhound bus in Colorado is hailed for saving his 70 passengers by stopping safely after grappling with a man who shot him. 62-year-old George Pettis of Amarillo, Texas, died on an operating table 3 hours after he was shot. He'd been planning to retire November 1st. Three passengers helped Pettis subdue the gunman. He was able to stop his bus before going into shock. The suspect, also 62 years old, is identified as George McElhannon of Monroe, Louisiana. He boarded in Oklahoma with a ticket to Seattle. Authorities say the suspect said nothing, just fired two shots at the driver from a nearby seat. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Palmer Payne. From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Bob Windsor, ABC News. Listen.
For those of us who believe in the dream, it's a great day for America and for the world.
If they're doing it with the idea of wearing me down, they're going to be disappointed.
Since May of 1979, Mr. Harper has furnished information to the Polish Committee for State Security, the Polish Intelligence Service.
You can tell the Russians we're having an awful good time over here playing baseball.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's world news.
Why do cancer rates vary in different countries? Why do women in Japan get very little breast cancer, while the rates are high in England and Uruguay?
For cancer of the colon and rectum, the rates are low in Mexico and high in Scotland. The experts believe the reasons are mainly in the environment, how we live, what we eat, if we smoke.
We know that cigarette smoking is the major cause of lung cancer. What else in the United States helps bring on or prevent other cancers?
This is what the American Cancer Society will determine with its new cancer prevention study. New consumer products and drugs may or may not be factors. We'll find out from this project by studying the living habits of a million people.
It's another important way your American Cancer Society fights cancer. Help in the fight. Give generously when your volunteer calls on you. Remember, how you live may save your life.
In 1955, a black woman named Rosa Parks refused to give a white man her seat on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. That defiance of what was then law caught the attention of a young black minister who organized a boycott of Montgomery's transit system. That minister was Martin Luther King, Jr., and the boycott was only the first of many civil rights protests he led until his murder in Memphis in 1968. This past Wednesday, after sometimes bitter debate, the U.S. Senate passed a bill establishing a national holiday in Dr. King's honor. In Detroit, where she now lives, Rosa Parks thought about what that meant.
Even though it's been a long time coming, I'm glad to see that it has been passed and hope that we will be able to realize some of the things that he wished to accomplish in his lifetime. Freedom, justice, equality, and peace.
Correspondent Vic Ratner was on Capitol Hill when the vote was taken.
It was one of those rare moments when you can feel history in the making in the Senate chamber. The spectators' galleries packed, long lines of people waiting to get in. And in the visitors' gallery, the son and widow of Dr. Martin Luther King watched as the Senate voted for the new holiday. Later, Mrs. King thanked the senators.
For those of us who believe in the dream, it's a great day for America and for the world.
Among those voting against the bill, Southerners Stennis of Mississippi and Randolph of West Virginia, conservatives Goldwater of Arizona, Tower of Texas, and opposition leader Helms of North Carolina. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
Senator Helms had raised questions about whether or not Dr. King had associated with communists. At a news conference several hours after the 78-22 vote was taken, President Reagan said he did not fault the sincerity of Helms or others who felt the same way. But Mr. Reagan declined to give an opinion on whether he thought such allegations were accurate. The president did say this.
I would have preferred a day similar to, say, Lincoln's birthday, which is not technically a national holiday, but is certainly a day reverenced by a great many people in our country and has been. I would have preferred that. But since they seem bent on making it a national holiday, I believe the symbolism of that day is important enough that I'll sign that legislation when it reaches my desk.
And that will mean that starting in 1986, the third Monday of January will be a federal holiday in honor of Martin Luther King. President Reagan named his choice to replace William Clark as National Security Advisor. He's Robert McFarlane. Mr. Reagan said McFarlane was more than qualified because he's
a decorated Marine, a scholar, advisor to three presidents, a veteran of Capitol Hill, counselor of the Department of State, deputy director of the NSC staff, and most recently, my personal representative to the delicate negotiations in the Middle East.
Democratic Congressman Les Aspin of Wisconsin, a frequent critic of the administration, finds little fault with McFarlane's nomination.
He knows more about the subjects that a National Security Council advisor deals with than Clark did when he took the job, and I think he's politically more sensitive than almost anybody else in that administration to the politics of issues and the issues of how they play in Congress.
United Nations Ambassador Gene Kirkpatrick had also been considered as William Clark's replacement, but President Reagan says...
Gene Kirkpatrick is ambassador to the United Nations. She continues there as ambassador to the United Nations, where she has done, I think, as magnificent a job as anyone who has ever held that post, and probably more so than most. And she is invaluable in what she's doing.
Mr. Reagan is still shopping around for someone to take McFarland's job as his troubleshooter in the Middle East. State Department correspondent Barry Dunsmore has more on that.
There is a sense of urgency here in Washington as the situation in Lebanon continues to deteriorate. Former Special Ambassador Robert McFarland, who was named National Security Advisor on Monday, had actually considered returning to the area briefly himself, but that's now been ruled out as impractical. However, the feeling is that it's very important to get someone with full White House support back to the Mideast as quickly as possible.
Reason for that was evident in Beirut this week as another U.S. Marine was killed and several more wounded by Muslim sniper fire and a car bomb. And as Marine Major Robert Jordan said...
It's obvious that we've got some new players in town who are interested in breaking the ceasefire down. And they seem to have launched a series of attacks against multinational force contingents in an effort to arouse public opinion to have these contingents pulled out of Lebanon.
But as President Reagan told his news conference...
As long as there's a possibility of making the overall peace plan work... We're going to stay there.
And Mr. Reagan said the U.S. would not allow Syria and its Soviet advisors to destroy the chances for stability in Lebanon.
If they're doing it with the idea of wearing me down, they're going to be disappointed.
As for the reconciliation talks on Lebanon, Switzerland has offered to host them, although no date's been set. The talks had been scheduled to start at Beirut Airport this week, but the Muslim leaders said they wouldn't show up because the airport wasn't safe enough. Hundreds of thousands of anti-nuclear demonstrators took to the streets of many European cities this weekend. The biggest turnouts were in West Germany, where ABC's Gary Bautel covered one of the protests.
An estimated 400,000 jammed the Hofgarten, this park in central Bonn, and the streets around it. For this, one of several mass rallies in Germany, today conducted at the end of a week of anti-nuclear missile protests. Several of the stars of the U.S. nuclear freeze movement are here as well, retired Admiral Jean LaRocque and Daniel Ellsberg, for example. This rally, like so many others in recent days, very peaceful, also somewhat carnival-like, except for the hundreds and hundreds of banners with their dire warnings of the possibility of nuclear holocaust should the United States go through with the deployment of Pershing 2 and cruise missiles. Gary Bautel, ABC News, Bonn.
A rerun of last July's debate and vote in the House this week as members argued whether or not to cut off CIA support for the Nicaraguan rebels fighting the Sandinista government. Democrat Edward Boland of Massachusetts doesn't support the Sandinistas, but he doesn't like covert aid either.
The Congress ought to send a clear signal that this war is not or should not be United States policy. Our policy should be to encourage peace through negotiation.
But Republican Henry Hyde of Illinois argued that cutting off aid meant playing into the Sandinistas' hands.
We're consigned to the role of a poor, lumbering Gulliver, tied down by wimpish, Lilliputian, congressional inaction, a Congress that hasn't the will or the wit to resist leftist, socialist ideology.
About the time the House was voting 227 to 194 to cut off CIA support to the rebels, Nicaragua's Foreign Minister Miguel Descoto was bringing a new plan for peace to the State Department.
We have presented a very concrete and detailed proposals for the guaranteeing of the international peace and security of all of the Central American states.
But the U.S. gave Descoto's proposals a cool reception, saying the plan had many shortcomings. The U.S. has been watching the Caribbean island of Grenada because of an airport being built there. The Reagan administration says it will allow Cuban and Soviet warplanes to land on the island. The government of Grenada says the airport and its 9,000-foot runway are being built to accommodate jumbo jets bringing tourists. The government leaned a little further to the left a week ago when its Prime Minister, Morris Bishop, was put under house arrest. He was freed by supporters this week. and Bishop and some members of his cabinet were killed as they supposedly marched on Grenada's army headquarters. The army said Bishop and his ministers were caught in a crossfire, but from the neighboring island of Barbados, Prime Minister Tom Adams said he doubted that.
I am assured, Ken Bean, that he was executed. We got news of it in Barbados from someone who had seen the dead bodies of Bishop and Whiteman. And there was really no doubt that a crowd of a couple of thousand people saw Bishop walking away with his hands in the air.
A reporter for the Caribbean News Service in Bridgetown, Barbados, Rudon Ezersley, told us what the radio station on Grenada was saying about the situation.
The radio said that the Revolutionary Military Council is in control, and it has warned citizens that they must not venture onto the streets. They must remain confined to their homes because the troops have been given instructions to shoot dead anyone seen on the streets.
At the State Department, spokesman John Hughes says close attention is being paid to Americans on Grenada.
The number of U.S. citizens in Grenada is somewhere between 800 and 1,000. And prior to the recent outbreak of violence, we had communicated our concerns about a U.S. Citizen welfare to Grenadian authorities. And as I say, we're obviously monitoring events with particular care in this regard.
One of the Americans on Grenada is a student at St. George's University Medical School, Earl Helgeson of Old Greenwich, Connecticut.
There hasn't been any problem as far as us. Right. No casualties, nothing like that. No run-ins with the military. Okay, we're pretty much keeping a low profile. The military basically is keeping an eye on us, not so much as hostage types, but just to make sure that we're okay.
Some 2,000 U.S. Marines were sent to the area this weekend to keep an eye on things from positions on ships offshore. Accurate news about the situation on Grenada has been hard to get because the island's new leaders are trying to keep foreign reporters from covering the story. Alistair Hughes is our correspondent there, and he's under arrest. Arrested in San Francisco this week, James Durward Harper.
Since May of 1979, Mr. Harper has furnished information to the Polish Committee for State Security, the Polish Intelligence Service. The information he sold included classified national defense information on the Minuteman intercontinental ballistic missile system and the ballistic missile defense research and development programs of the United States.
That's the chief deputy U.S. attorney in San Francisco, William McGivern, who says Harper got $250,000 for spying. Agent Robert Gast of the FBI tells us about the damage Harper did.
We have an estimation from the Department of Defense in which it is claimed that serious damage was done to our national security. And as a matter of fact, the same official stated that the value to the Warsaw Pact planners, military planners, is beyond calculation.
In New York, Edwin Wilson, a former CIA agent, was convicted of the attempted murder of two federal prosecutors, a business associate, and five government witnesses who linked him to the sale of explosives to Libya. Wilson's already serving 32 years in prison for selling weapons to the Gaddafi regime. This has been a year of violent weather, and another example of that has caused severe problems for parts of the southern plains. Flooding has been caused by heavy rains triggered by a hurricane that hit Mexico. Parts of Oklahoma were especially hard hit. Eleanor Bartlett tells us how hard.
The water came in with such force that it exploded the back door. And when that happened, then people began to get their children's things ready to go. I called the fire department, and they sent a school bus out to evacuate it.
In Guthrie, not far from Oklahoma City, Lorraine Jackson says the Cottonwood River was way over its banks.
My house sits about 3 foot off the ground, and the water was over knee-deep inside my house. We were sitting up on a cabinet. When we saw the boat, I was afraid he was going to leave us. I grabbed a flashlight and shined the flashlight out the windows, made it to the front door, and he said, "Did you want to come out?" I said, "We sure do."
Oklahoma Governor George Nye has declared a state of emergency. The government's been trying to get General Motors to recall all of its 1.1 million 1980 model X-body cars, and it wants GM to pay $4 million in damages. All this because of braking problems. And this past Thursday, the Justice Department charged that internal memos at GM repeatedly warned of those problems before those cars went into production. Clarence Ditlow is with the Center for Auto Safety.
The only thing that we can say about the documents today is that we think the government ought to modify its lawsuit and bring criminal charges against General Motors for lying, and I think that corporate executives of General Motors should go to jail over this one.
But GM's Stan Hall says his company will fight the suit.
The government's case against GM and the X-Cars is based on a distorted and one-sided analysis of the record. That analysis exists only because the NHTSA failed to follow its own procedures, denying GM the right to defend itself while unfair media publicity was directed against it.
The same day the Justice Department released the GM documents, the EPA ordered the company to recall some 112,000 1979 model Chevy Chevettes, the government says are exceeding federal carbon monoxide emission standards. In another story affecting GM, the company agreed to pay more than $42 million to offset a 10-year-old complaint charging employment discrimination against women, blacks, and Hispanics. The chairman of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, Clarence Thomas, says Tuesday's agreement is far-reaching.
We think that the agreement signed today between the by the officials from United Auto Workers, General Motors, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is one of the most significant agreements in the history of this agency.
The agreement sets numerical goals for hiring, training, and promoting women and members of minority groups, and GM's Ed Dilworth says
it won't have any direct impact on employment as such, but we feel that any time you enhance the skills of your employees, you're increasing their opportunities in the corporation and in industry in general.
The agreement also includes a provision in which GM will give $15 million in endowments and scholarships, primarily to assist company employees and their families. Airbags and automatic seat belts were in the news again this week, as the Transportation Department said it planned a six-month review of the plan to put them in cars. As Transportation Secretary Elizabeth Dole put it,
we're going to put all options out there. We're going to get the latest data, what's occurred in the last 2 years. We're going to provide an opportunity for full and careful review of each of the options.
The review brought immediate criticism from consumer groups and from such people as the former head of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Joan Claybrook.
The Department of Transportation has been working this since 1969. They certainly have enough information to issue a rule right now. And this rulemaking proceeding certainly implies that they're dragging their feet.
Mrs. Dole denies that. Should the airbags or automatic seat belts or both eventually be required, they wouldn't appear in cars until the 1987 model year at the earliest. The top federal official on highway safety said this week that there was no need for federal laws to set the minimum drinking age at 21.
We're not sure that they work very well in the first place, and I guess our concern is that it's the heavy-handed federal government intruding on the state's prerogatives.
That was Diane Steed, who told a House committee that 16 states had established 21 as the minimum age for buying alcoholic beverages. Congressman James Florio of New Jersey is the sponsor of the federal law, and he thinks too many young people will die if we wait for each state to act independently. Car theft continues to be a problem for Americans. In fact, Stephen Brobeck of the Consumer Federation of America says it keeps getting worse every year.
Over 1 million vehicles are stolen. There are more than 1 million thefts of accessories and related contents, and these impose enormous economic and non-economic costs on consumers.
Put all of that together, says Brobeck, and that costs you and me nearly $3.33 billion a year. Brobeck's consumer group is urging Congress to help cut car thefts. The economy perked along at an almost 8% rate during the third quarter, and Commerce Secretary Malcolm Baldridge is cheered by that.
I do not think that the recovery is in any danger of stalling out. We're seeing, by and large, a normal, healthy recovery. We don't see any aberrations or flukes at work here that could either stall it out or overheat it.
Baldridge is even bullish about interest rates.
We see now more pressure more pressures pushing interest rates down than we see increasing them. I think if there's any near-term move in interest rates, it would probably be on the downward side, not the upward side.
But Federal Reserve Board Chairman Paul Volcker still maintains the federal budget holds the key to lasting recovery.
I think interest rates are higher today than they would be with a smaller deficit currently and prospectively.
The fact that interest rates inched up during the summer caused September's housing start figure to hit a five-month low. An update this week on the continuing investigation into a pair of meat processing plants which provide most of the meat for the nation's school lunch program. Small metal staples found in hamburger at Colorado and Nebraska plants have prompted the Agriculture Department to impound almost all chopped meat coming off production lines at those firms. Cattle King of Denver and Nebraska Beef Processors of Gearing, Nebraska. The greenhouse effect is nothing new. Scientists have been saying that a buildup of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere could cause serious climate changes in the years ahead, in effect making the Earth warmer. But the EPA said this week that the warming trend will start in the 1990s, earlier than first thought. The EPA's John Hoffman tells us what we can expect.
We'll see a change in the distribution of water availability, where it rains and how much evaporation there is. We'll see a difference in the runoff of streams and the way ecologies develop. We'll see a difference in where farming can be done well and where it can't be done well. Plants will grow better because CO2 is a fertilizer. So there's some good things that will happen.
But Hoffman says to call this the approach of doomsday just isn't accurate.
I think it would be a mistake to see any of this as catastrophic. Mankind has had many changes that it's faced. And in my opinion, what we face here are the fruits, in a way, of our success. The whole world is industrialized to the point where we've changed some basic elements of nature. We can learn to live with it, just the way we've harnessed other parts of nature.
Another report on the same subject was issued by the National Academy of Sciences. It basically confirms the EPA study, but plays down some of the changes in climate the EPA forecast. We'll have one final story when World News This Week continues in a moment.
I was standing in line at the supermarket checking to see if I had 10 items or less when I realized that my pocketbook was missing. I tried to think back to when I'd seen it last. My Social Security check had come that morning, and I remembered putting it in my pocketbook. Oh no, I thought, I've probably lost that too. I felt just awful. I left the food right on the counter and hurried home. And there it was, sitting right on the table by the front door. I can't tell you how relieved I was. And the one good thing that came out of all this is that I made sure that at least I won't take the chance of losing my check again. I signed up for direct deposit, so now my check is deposited automatically. And I don't have to worry about it getting lost or stolen. I still have to carry a pocketbook. But thank goodness I don't have to carry my check anymore.
Ask for direct deposit wherever you have a checking or savings account. It's free, and after all, you've got it coming. A public service of the U.S. Treasury.
It was early Monday morning in Baltimore, but Oriole fans weren't about ready for bed. Shortstop Cal Ripken, third baseman Todd Cruz, and outfielder John Shelby leading thousands of their fans in song to celebrate their World Series victory over the Phillies. After watching his team drop the opener, manager Joe Altobelli turned his Orioles around to take the next four games.
The greatest feeling is when you've accomplished everything that you set out to do in spring training, and of course, winning the World Series kind of proves that to you, and it's got to be the best feeling in the world when you're a baseball person.
President Reagan had called to congratulate the team, and when he talked to Series MVP Rick Dempsey, the Oriole catcher offered Mr. Reagan a new approach in dealing with the Soviets.
You can tell the Russians we're having an awful good time over here playing baseball.
And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin, directed by Ron Rollo, engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Tom Kennedy. I'm Bob Windsor, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.